Next.
I did.
Okay, welcome everyone. Today is February 17th. Welcome to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing, and we have a great informational hearing today on veterans. And this is a really special population, one that we know that there's a committee dedicated specifically to this population, but there's certainly a really big overlap with our Human Services and Housing Committee. We have a couple of champions in particular, Representative Parrish and Representative Evans, who are real champions and always remind us when it comes to any issue, seniors, disabilities, housing, any issue of the intersection. And Representative Evans is actually testifying on his own bill in rules, so he will be walking in at any minute, but was sorry that he wasn't here because he really helped put a lot of these panels together. So we've got several panels, four panels today, and I know that Representative Bueller has to leave a little early, so we want to get right into it. Panel one, okay, the official, we're opening up the informational hearing on veteran housing needs in Oregon. Margaret Van Vliet, please, and Mitch Sparks and Jill Smith. You were hiding behind there. I didn't see you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Margaret Van Vliet, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services Department. Really happy to be here with you this afternoon to talk about, as you say, this special population and these important issues. I'm going to give a pretty brief overview of some statistics and a little bit of a touch on what our agency does, and then I'll turn it over to my colleagues. But first, I'll make sure this is moving. And I don't know how to do that, so there's that. Nope. I need technical assistance. Sorry. I'm sorry. So just by way of quick reminder, the committee, I think, is familiar with the Department of Housing and Community Services. Our vision, of course, is that all Oregonians have the opportunity to pursue prosperity and live free from poverty. Our mission, I won't read the words to you here, but I think what's important about this is that we see our role and our job in that larger vision is to both provide the housing, but also provide the engagement, the collaboration, to work with our local partners and our peers in state government to work on larger issues of prosperity, opportunity, and poverty alleviation.
Thank you very much.
What I'm going to do is quickly sort of walk you through some statistics about that come from our annual point-in-time homeless count. This is a count that occurs every January over the period of 1 week. It's a thing that HUD mandates for all of us in state and local government that get HUD funds. We're required to do this count according to their sort of prescription and their definitions. So that happens every year in January. In odd-numbered years, the communities count both people sleeping in shelters and transitional housing, as well as outside through a street count, so people who are camping or sleeping in cars or not in a shelter or a transitional facility. What happens is local communities do that count. They figure out what's going to work best to count, to get an accurate count within their communities, with their local nonprofits. They report that data into us. We assemble it and turn it over to HUD. So that's the source of this data. And so for January, in January 2015, just about a year ago, we counted 13,000 homeless individuals by this method, households. 10,000 households made up that number, and of that, 1,400 were homeless veterans. The other piece here is this distinction about chronically homeless. 4 in 10 vets, as you can see here, were considered chronically homeless. And that's an important distinction in our world, again, dictated a bit by HUD, but it's helpful to our understanding of the populations, that they were continually homeless for at least 12 months or 4 times over the last 3 years. So that's idea of chronically homeless as opposed to sort of situational or periodic homelessness. One of the things we're asked to do is look at how many are sheltered versus unsheltered. And you can see at that last count, more were sheltered, but it's still a pretty alarming number statewide who are unsheltered. And we know that these are the folks who are camping or living in cars or other things like this. Not surprisingly, the vast majority are men, but there is an important slice of the population that is women, and we understand that they have, of course, different needs, some similar needs, but some different needs.
Can I stop it there? Mm-hmm. And Margaret, you may not know the answer, but you may know. How does that compare to what the gender difference is for vets living in Oregon overall?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mitch Sparks. I work for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And that demographic is fairly consistent with women veterans population
okay.
in general.
All right. Thank you.
We're also interested in tracking and, of course, required to track sort of race and ethnicity of the different populations, again, with an eye towards are there different interventions that may be more appropriate. So here's just a snapshot of what we found a year ago with this count. And then
yes. on that slide. Sorry, thank you.
Yes.
The percentage of African-American veterans who are homeless, that number doesn't necessarily track how many veterans in the overall population, because that number seems high.
The 7% is actually a little bit lower than the demographic of African-American mm-hmm. veterans.
Okay. So then that's better than it was a few years ago, because at one point that was higher, the group.
So with that just sort of high-level overview of the data and the numbers that we're talking about, I wanted to spend a couple of minutes talking about the tools that we have that we use to work on this. The most important is, of course, the document recording fee. You're familiar with this tool. It was originally created in 2009. It was expanded in 2013 to add additional capacity specifically to help us provide housing opportunities for veterans. By statute, the whole document recording fee resource is divided into these three purposes, and I'll talk briefly about them. Emergency housing account gets a smallest slice. Homeownership assistance is another small slice. The majority goes into what we call the general housing account program. Generally speaking, that's the pot of money that we use to help develop multifamily rental housing, and so that's why it's the biggest slice. Those numbers were put into statute, so and that's been the case for a bit. Yes?
Thank you. Quick question. I always thought it was $5 specifically for this, and what I later learned is, so correct me if I'm wrong, that it's actually 25% of the document recording. We increased it by $5 so that we could allocate 25%, which means if we increased it to 30 in the future, it would still, by statute, get 25%. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I don't actually know the answer to that question.
Okay.
If it was the $5
or 25%.
Or 25%. But let me look into that and we'll get back to you with the rest of the committee with an answer to that. Thank you. So the emergency housing account, that's the 10% slice of the pie, and again, 25% of the overall, of this resource overall does go to providing resources for veterans. This is the pot of money that is used to prevent or end homelessness through emergency rent assistance, things like first and last month rent, deposits, things of that nature. Data point about how much has come in to this pot specifically for veterans. It's about $578,000 since we began collecting the fee in July of 14. The other thing about this resource is it is allocated by formula out to our community action agency partners. And so those agencies, of course, serve all 36 counties, and they do the on-the-ground work and sometimes with other nonprofits and other community partners to make sure that folks have access to this resource. So they've been doing administering EHA or Emergency Housing Account for us for a number of years. when we added the $5 for veterans. We've been working with them and encouraging them to work with their local veteran service officers to make sure they're really targeting and really capturing, making sure this is accessible to veterans at the local level. Just a quick look at the numbers that have been served since this became a focus in July of 14. I'll leave that up there for a minute so you can have a quick look at the numbers. I think it'll be interesting to track this over time and see how effective it is and go back and sort of check on if there's things we could do that would make it more effective.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Are you tracking in where you're saying veterans served? Are you tracking at all people with combat deployment versus, you know, somebody who's served? I mean, there's lots of ways, particularly women, we know may have not served in combat service, but had, like, victim of a military sexual trauma, which certainly leads to sort of a downward spiral, but a lot of times for folks. So are you segmenting out, though, combat-specific?
Madam Chair and Representative Parrish, I don't know the answer to that. My guess is no, but I think it is a thing that we could certainly talk to our community action partners about.
I'd like to see that added
and
in.
See if that is, you know, if there's a way that we could capture that and then, again, look at the data over time and say, are there interventions that maybe we need to adjust, which I imagine is what you're getting at. So that's a great suggestion. We'll look into that. Thank you. The biggest slice of the new document recording fee money, of course, goes into the General Housing Account Program. Again, it's the multifamily rental development pool. It's used to both develop or preserve affordable rental housing. We've collected almost $4.4 million in this pot since July 1st. And we had offered these resources out in a notice of funding availability or a solicitation last year. We were pleased that to be able to recommend to the Housing Stability Council, and they did accept our recommendations to award $3.7 million last November into two projects. And the two projects are just a quick snapshot here, one in Klamath Falls and another one in Medford. We were pretty excited to see these two proposals come forward. Nice local partnerships, really rich, you know, sort of array of services, and the inclusion of VASH vouchers, I think, is really important to the veterans populations. Jill Smith is going to be able to talk to you a little bit more about VASH vouchers in a few minutes. The other thing I will make note of, and we try and pay attention to this, is that the federal government has had a really intentional effort around ending veterans' homelessness through a variety of new tools. We're working with our local partners to get as many of these VASH vouchers, SSVF, grants, supportive services for veterans' families. We know that some of our local partners have been able to receive these resources, and we think they're making a good difference. And then the mayor's challenge to end veterans' homelessness was actually an initiative that came out of the White House a couple of years ago. Eugene and Portland are both part of that effort. So that does it for my sort of quick flyby of how we see it and what tools we're deploying. And I think with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague from ODVA.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to expand on just a little bit of the statistical data that was provided. And Oregon had the fifth highest rate of unsheltered veterans in the United States at 47.5%. So that is a statistic that we've seen an increase in, and with that, an increase in homeless veterans by almost 15% from the years of 2009 to 15. I checked with HUD, and the 2016 point in time count has not been compiled yet, but they are working on that as we speak, and we should hear back about the current status of that from HUD. I don't want to steal anybody's thunder on the HUD VASH program. I'm not sure what they're going to talk what we're going to talk about, but just a little primer on the HUD VASH program, because it is so important that to veterans, because it involves Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing, which is the Bastion, and it provides not only rental assistance but wraparound services for mental health and health care and counseling, which is really important to not only combat homelessness but to keep people housed and long term. So it is a very important program for us. Eligibility is veterans must need case management services to be eligible for it. And that's for mental illnesses, substance abuse disorder, or physical disabilities. And they have to meet the definition of homelessness under the McKinney-Vento definition. So they have to meet the federal government standard for that. In 2015, State of Oregon was allotted 217 HUD VASH vouchers. Multnomah County and Jackson County were the highest. Multnomah County was 79, and Jackson County, which she talked about one of the programs, 50. And then throughout the state, they were distributed in blocks of anywhere from 17 to 10. So the HUD VASH vouchers, 217, mm-hmm. is very minimal in account for what's needed out there. But we are, as a state, seeing that. Just a little information from HUD, that's $6.1 million of federal subsidy for the HUD VASH voucher program for 2015. So
that's 217.
Yes.
Wow.
And I don't think that all of them were used either. And I asked HUD to give me that data, and that's not part of their accounting at this time of the year, but that's what the 2015 numbers were. So they use three sets of data to determine where they go, and the point in time is a very important piece of that. And then also it's a really important data that they collect at the Veterans Affairs, and this is primarily with their healthcare system, to gather the information on homeless veterans mm-hmm. in the areas. So, but the VASH, to be eligible for the VASH, is that there has to be veteran services available for the veterans. So who gets left out? It's the rural veterans in the state of Oregon. They tend to get left out of that picture because there's not the supportive services that are required under the program. Mm. The distribution of the vouchers is we're very interested in the 2016, and I opened up a good line of communication with our HUD office in Portland, and they're extremely helpful in obtaining this information. Our agency plays a role within the supportive services, not directly, but we're very much a gateway into getting people to contact, you know, a warm handoff to the VASH people, and it's a great start for a lot of these veterans, is that they visit our office and then they can we give them that warm handoff, and then we also provide the benefit counseling for the long term financial or disability compensation payments. So in a couple counties, the county veteran service officers are actually co-located in the same offices. So it's a round robin of services that they go through and receive. You know, they get into the program, get their benefits, and enroll in health care, and it's a great. And one of them is a model that I would personally like to see all over the country is the Community Resource Center on First Street's Federal VA office, and it's a one-stop shopping for homeless veterans. They have everybody there, and homeless veterans can walk in and guide themselves right into the program from there.
Is that the only one in Oregon?
That is the only one in the state of Oregon, unfortunately. So it's right on First Street. It's in a great location, and every time I've been there is that they've been packed. So and Multnomah County Veterans Service Offices has a person there pretty much every day. So it's a great system. Some of the issues, again, rural areas are very lean, and really don't get the VASH vouchers, and that's because of the VA's lack of supportive services. The availability of rental property for people with vouchers, federal housing vouchers, and that goes to the housing crisis in general. That's not something new. And we were talking earlier about chronically homeless veterans, and this program is good. But when we talk about, you know, if you said 4 out of the 10 were chronically homeless, is the ones that are really have serious mental health, traumatic brain damage, their needs are very great. And there's a couple programs in the state of Oregon that have really been influential to help the people with the really very much needs of the total wraparound services needed, mm-hmm. such as Central City Concern in Portland. Mm-hmm. They really have a great program where they get put in and are able to be helped. So, and we work very closely with them through our county partnerships too. Our rural county veteran service officers tend to have a homegrown version of this this program, where they work really closely. They have a veteran that comes in and they're homeless. Is of course there's not really a VASH voucher for them to get, and they're very creative in providing some the serve county services, community action teams and such, where they try anything and everything to try to house veterans. And we have some really fantastic folks out there in those rural counties making a difference every day for our rural veterans. There's two success stories that, and I'm not going to steal Commissioner Farr's thunder here,
yeah.
but Lane County and Portland Housing Bureau have two programs that I'd like to highlight because of the fact that they have pulled in all the partnerships needed to actually make these work. Because when we think about homeless veterans, is that when I was doing veteran service officer work, is that I can sometimes getting them just the shelter isn't enough. We have to look at all the issues that come with that. And that is, if I get an apartment and it's here, but my services are on the other side of town, transportation, first and last month's rent, furnishings, security deposits, there's a lot of issues, and I'm sure Commissioner Farr will talk about some of the ways that they combated those issues. And so we have to, if we're going to talk about housing veterans and ending homelessness, is to talk about the peripheral issues that are very important that we also have solutions to also to. So that I'm not going to go into those programs, but it is extremely important. A successful program has to have a lot of moving parts, and that's a combination of state, county, federal, nonprofits that work together and have the ability to problem solve to handle all those peripheral issues that come with homelessness.
So, Mitch, we probably need to start moving on to four panels.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure there's some time for questions and discussion.
That was pretty much ends my my testimony. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for letting me be here to talk about the Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing Program. I am the Chief Operating Officer for Home Forward, and we actually administer 525 VASH vouchers at Home Forward. Our first award was received, I think, about 6 years ago.
Did you say your full name?
Jill Smith.
Sounds like a new name, maybe. So.
Yes. It just 2 years, and it's still coming out. So I'm going to elaborate and go a little bit deeper on what VASH is and how it works and why it doesn't work sometimes, and tell you what we've learned over the years that has finally resulted in us making progress in Multnomah County. VASH is Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing. The money flows through HUD to the housing and through the VA Medical Center for the wraparound supportive services that were just described. You do have to be a veteran who's willing to engage in case management with the VA to qualify, which is a barrier for some veterans. It's a housing first model, which makes it more difficult to use. The fact that HUD linked a Housing Choice Section 8 voucher, which is intended to use in the private rental market, with housing first can be challenging. These are folks that are homeless. Many of the people that we've served have been on the streets for many, many years, over 10 years, and moving into a private market for anyone in that situation would be a tough transition. So it can be challenging. The VA also has goals they've been given to serve high barrier chronic homeless, the hardest to serve, they've been given parameters around that. So that tends to be who we're referred to. A housing authority is basically running a Section 8 voucher program with fewer screening criteria so that we can serve the more high barrier folks. Mm-hmm. And also, we're not allowed to issue a voucher to anyone that's not referred from the VA. So they make sure they're eligible. Like I said, we administer 525 of these. The federal funding is highly valuable. We found it difficult to use for several reasons, like the housing market, the high barrier folks, which is why, in partnership with our jurisdiction and community partners, we've leveraged local funding and services to ensure that we can use that federal funding. At Home Forward, and I think this is pretty typical for all VASH vouchers around the state, we receive $7,200 per veteran, per VASH voucher per year, just for the rent assistance piece. There's also money flowing into the VA for the services. That's a lot of money for 500 and, what are we at, 525 now. Another thing we need to be aware of is HUD funding. The following year, they fund you at a level based on what you used the prior year. So unfortunately, if you left 100 vouchers on the table unused, the next year you'll be funded for 100 fewer. So that shows you why it's so critical that we make sure we use this resource that's been allocated to our state. In Multnomah County this past year, it's taken us years to learn these lessons, and I might be stealing somebody's thunder, but I am going to share a few things with you that are tools that we have found work to make VASH vouchers a successful tool. One thing that we've done is Multnomah County and the City of Portland have contributed this year $132,000 to a flex fund. It's just a flexible fund which serves our veterans, enabling them to have barriers reduced that make it hard for them to get into housing, things like old utility bills that they owed, transportation costs, any kind of a debt related to a landlord in the past, things that are pretty typical for folks that have been struggling for a long time, security deposits, application fees. Home Forward pays for a security deposit for all of our VASH veterans equal to 1 month's rent. We've chosen to do that by using our moving to work flexibility. So not all housing authorities can do that. But 1 month's rent has not been enough. Most landlords require much more than that, unfortunately. Another thing that is new that we've learned and started in the last year that has been really helpful is, in order to ease the minds of the local landlords and the market rate landlords in the community, Multnomah County and Portland, the City of Portland, funded a landlord outreach and retention team. And what it is a team of three part-time people that work out of a local social service agency. JOIN is the agency they work out of. They provide 24/7 round-the-clock calls for landlords who are having issues, clients who are having issues. That has helped a lot. There's also an additional landlord guarantee fund for landlords who are willing to accept these high barrier veterans with VASH vouchers in addition to the state fund.
Can you say what that is?
Say what the guarantee fund is?
Yes.
I don't know the exact amount. Okay. I think it's very similar, but there's no need to get a small claims judgment for it. That's the biggest difference. I think it's $5,000.
Right. That would be like the Section 8 fund, $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes. Another thing Home Forward has done, which proved to be critical over the past year because of the rental market being so tight, and this is something that housing providers all over the state could do, we created a priority for apartments at the time somebody moved out. We have a portfolio of 4,000 units, and we decided we needed units. So we said every time somebody has a unit turnover, we're going to prioritize a veteran if they can get to us and get an application in within 24 hours. So we developed a system. We've housed 50 veterans like we intended to, like our goal was set in our own housing. And in the last couple months, another 40 are now living in our housing. So, and that was, they met our criteria. We just prioritized them getting in. That was really an important thing to test, and it actually took a lot of pressure from us to get the people running those apartments to do that. And that's another thing that's super important is the relationship with the landlord community. We've worked on that for years. I personally sit on the board for Multifamily Northwest, and I'm there to remind them of the mission side of the work that we do. Home Forward sought and received a waiver from HUD allowing us to establish separate higher payment standards, which is the maximum amount we can pay up to for rent for VASH. This is not an MTW thing. This is something any housing authority can do. So we have our regular payment standards, and then we have the higher ones for VASH because we had a goal to get these folks housed. Home Forward also set aside 50 additional just regular vouchers because, unfortunately, a lot of our homeless veterans are ineligible for VASH. They either had a dishonorable discharge for some reason, and they don't want to go through the process of having that overturned, or they don't want to engage with the VA. So we have 50, again, to try to meet our goal. Those 50 are all being fully utilized. In addition to all these efforts, we established an entirely separate system of intake and eligibility in our office. We've learned that this population needs to be treated differently. We have a one-stop shop, kind of like the CRRC, just down the street from our office. The veterans come in, they go through everything from eligibility to getting their voucher in their hand and leaving in one day. There's no back and forth, trying to find them, chasing paperwork. We've learned a lot. More than anything, I think we've learned that this takes a community effort, and we don't want to waste these precious funds. And those are the things that we've learned that have really had an impact.
That's fantastic. Are there questions for this panel?
I have one question, actually. So how much is the value, the housing side of the value of the VASH voucher compared to Section 8 voucher? Is it the same amount?
They're about the same.
Mm-hmm. And so I know that Section 8, we're having a very big turn back rate because they're not keeping up with the level of rents. That may be different in Portland where you've got special funds to try to keep up with the increase. But are you finding that with the VASH vouchers? Maybe I should ask for you because you're more statewide. But both Portland and statewide, is there a turn back rate because people are not able to keep up with rents?
Madam Chair, I would have to find that out for you.
Okay. I think I can answer on behalf of the state. I'm really actively engaged in the Oregon Housing Authority Association. That is a problem. We've actually had a greater success rate for VASH than our regular vouchers because of some of the things that we've done, including giving them a higher payment standard. Our success rate has been about 80%, and we're down to 70% for our regular vouchers. So people are struggling, but they have a caseworker to help them. We have all these navigation programs, all this assistance. So, and we just barely had received approval for fair market rents in the Portland metropolitan region, which is 7 counties, including Washington County, Clark County, Clackamas County, Multnomah County, for higher fair market rents.
Yes, I hear. Yes. The two-bedroom went up by 26%.
It was a 28% increase. 28%. Yes, across that entire
Spork
area.
Increase.
Yes. So while that's great news for allowing us to set our rates higher, it doesn't necessarily come with funding.
Quick,
yes.
Quick question. So the folks that you're serving, I mean, are they, when they come to you, are they largely dealing with, like, PTSD? Are they just happen to be that they just can't find a job and really don't have some of the sort of the health care disability type of issues that we are see pretty commonly in veterans? Because I mean, there's some other models out there around, like, right now I think we've had conversations about seniors and doing wraparound, like, Medicare, Medicaid type services with them. But how much of are you seeing when people are come with the housing issues that they're actually dealing with also either disability issues, access to the VA issues, and PTSD type or results of MST?
We actually don't want to know that. We're not allowed to know that as the housing provider. The VA would need to answer that question. I can say that over half of the veterans that we serve have been chronically homeless homeless numerous years. That's what we do know. And we also know that a large majority of them have no income. They're zero income people, which is really tough. Do you want to elaborate on?
The chronically homeless veterans it's a very high proportion of mental health issues with chronic homelessness, as we all well know. So, but I cannot answer about the fact, is it PTSD related or combat related? I don't have any statistical data on that.
So if they're coming to you and they have zero income, but they potentially have a mentally, you know, PTSD or combat related or, you know, some other, likely they are qualified for some level of VA compensation.
Absolutely.
On the disability side, but you're saying they're not, since they've not connected to the VA, they are not getting those dollars and therefore they have no income.
And that's why it's important that county veteran service officers, the federal VA, are involved within that teamwork to check that block to make sure that we are filing those claims and providing that long-term stability for compensation or pension in some cases too.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, so the next panel we have is Val Valfrey, Andy Smith, and Commissioner Bill Farr.
Pat Farr.
Oh yeah, right there. Would you like to start, Commissioner Farr, former state representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee. Thank you for hearing our testimony today. I am a former state rep, but you may remember my wife was a better state rep than I was. several sessions ago. I'm here to give you some good news. You know, you hear a lot of hand-wringing and things that we'd like to do that we can't do. I'm going to tell you about stuff that we do in Lane County, stuff that can be done elsewhere, not just in Oregon, but throughout the nation. We're doing things in Lane County that are really unprecedented, and we're doing it without any money. You know, we're an ONC county, and we have less and less money all the time, not more and more money. So we have to find ways to do it very, very imaginatively, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. I'm a Lane County Commissioner. I'm Vice Chair of the Commission. I'm also the Chair of the Veterans Housing Subcommittee of our Poverty and Homelessness Board. The Poverty and Homelessness Board is unique to Lane County. It's high-ranking policymakers are on the committee. Also, policy applicators, so to speak. For instance, I'm on the committee. The mayor of Eugene is on the committee, which is Kitty Piercy. The mayor of Springfield was on the committee. Representative Val Hoyle was on the committee. Then Paul Solomon, and a number of other people who are very deeply involved in policy implementation. I'm also the vice chair of the HACSA, which is our housing authority for Lane County, and I'm vice chair of the Board of Health for Lane County, former state rep, and 10 years on the Eugene City Council. So my background is in business, but I've got to tell you, Rep Parrish, you guys have a champion in your county, which is Martha Schrader.
Yes.
I love working with Commissioner Schrader. She is doing a superb job with the AOC and with the various things that we're working on, and she keeps very close track of what we're doing in Lane County in hopes to implement them in your county. So I'd like to talk a little bit about what we have done. You know, the point in time count is commonly accepted that it's understated. You know, it's wherever you go, you don't get the right number of people. You just simply cannot do it. What you can do is compare from one year to the last. And in Lane County, we have a relatively high number of unhoused people. But a year ago, we determined that there were someplace between 350 and 400 unhoused veterans in Lane County. That's a lot of unhoused veterans, men and women who some had post-traumatic shock syndrome, some had other combat-related issues. Others had substance abuse problems. Others had behavioral health disorders. And so we decided that we're going to house veterans last year. And we picked an arbitrary number. We picked 365. We said we're going to house 365 because it's kind of a catchy number. That's how many days there are in the year. So we decided we were going to house one veteran and their family in permanent housing for each day of the year. It was daunting, and nobody dreamed that we could possibly do it with the shrinking resources as far as government funding is concerned. But with a lot of partnerships, people stepped forward to be partners with us, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. The last week I was in Tucson and visiting my newly born grandson, and I picked up the newspaper the day after the Super Bowl, and the headlines were not about the Super Bowl in Tucson. Mm. This is the Arizona Daily Star. It says, homeless could get campsites and temporary houses. I thought, I'm going to read this. The next headline is, Citigroup looks to Eugene, Oregon for some options.
Wow. Nice.
And so I went down there and I checked off the programs that I was working on, that they are considering in Tucson, of all places. You know, Tucson isn't the kind of place that really particularly bends over backwards for human services. I'm not going to denigrate Tucson, but that's just the way it happens to be. It's not like Lane County or Multnomah County or Clackamas County or Oregon in general. So I'm pleased to say that they're looking at what we're doing down there, and I'm going to tell you just a little bit about what we've done. Last year, we did house 404 homeless veterans, and I'll tell you what that means. That means we permanently housed 340 formerly homeless veterans now have houses in Eugene, and we permanently housed 64 imminently at-risk veterans, and we did it through a community effort. We reached out throughout the community, and we knew that we couldn't do it with government money. Lane County couldn't do it. The city of Eugene and Springfield couldn't do it. So we looked to a private industry, and we looked to our local nonprofits, and we formed a coalition, and we determined that the way we do it is we address it on every single front. So I have a spreadsheet that I'm not going to bore you with by handing it out, but it'll be available if you want to look at it. And I'll tell you how we did some of it. VASH, you were talking about VASH a little bit ago. 79 of the veterans were housed through VASH. VASH is a great program, but the problem that we have with VASH is that in a community like, particularly like Eugene, the Eugene-Springfield metropolitan area, and like Cottage Grove, as a matter of fact, where there is a very deep shortage of housing, you know, there's not enough housing to go around, market rate that's accepted by VASH is higher than we can support with the VASH. So we're having difficulty finding people to accept VASH housing. Even with that, we found 79 permanent housing locations for through VASH. Rapid rehousing accounted for 148 of the houses, and very significantly, the supportive services for veteran families, SSVF, came in very strongly. We got a $3 million grant from the federal government, which came through St. Vincent de Paul, which is one of our local nonprofits, and they applied it, and we were able to house better than 150 veterans through the SSVF funding that we leveraged. Now, the good news about this is we don't have to use as much tax money as you might expect. We leverage money from outside. Some of it is tax money from the federal government. It's still tax money, but a lot of it comes through private sources. We have a lot of private individuals and very significantly nonprofits, which are predominantly supported with private money. So it's not something that we could have done by ourselves. And yesterday we had a ceremony that the mayor of Eugene and I received an award for something that we didn't do. You know, it's kind of embarrassing to get an award for something that everybody else sitting in the room did. But we took the award anyway. I am a veteran. I served in the 2nd of the 162. To put that in perspective, Charlie Company, the company that I commanded, was the first unit deployed in Kuwait. When the Middle East issues began, the 2nd of the 162 was also the last unit pulled out of Afghanistan very recently. A lot of those men and women are coming back to find themselves not able to find housing. Mm-hmm. So it's a good news story, and there's a lot to say about it. But HUD has been significant. We're finding new ways to put people in housing. We're building tiny housing, which is sometimes a little bit of a challenge with HUD because some of the things that we need to make the housing affordable aren't considered habitable by HUD. But it's happening, across Lane County. Lane County and Representative Hayden, you know, you've been a part of it down in Cottage Grove. A lot of it is happening down there, and you know that Cottage Grove is one of the leaders as far as providing human services to the people who are in dire need, and you yourself, you personally, have gone out of your way to make certain that people have, for instance, dental care and other medical care, and everybody's very, very appreciative of that, Representative Hayden. But it involved the City of Eugene, the City of Springfield, St. Vincent de Paul, HACSA, which is our housing authority, Shelter Care, a nonprofit, Sponsors, which is a program that helps to house people coming right out of the state penitentiary. The Eugene Mission, which historically has been faith-based, but have changed their approach to allow more to allow people to access the services without necessarily going to chapel, which used to be their requirement. Catholic Community Services, Cornerstone, and then significantly, I'm going to mention Acorn Property Management. We found that there were a lot of the renters, the landlords, weren't renting to veterans because of some of the things that you heard about earlier, prior convictions perhaps, sometimes substance abuse, people didn't have a steady income. It wasn't always people with no income. So we reached out, Mayor Piercy and I sat down over 1 week and we called virtually all of the renters, all of the landlord agencies in Lane County, and asked them for the help, and they stepped up to the plate. They did it. They allowed people to go into permanent housing that otherwise they would not have allowed to go in. Consequently, the good news is 404 veterans housed in Lane County last year. The better news is it's going to happen in Clackamas County too. And the better news is it's going to happen in Rep. Taylor's government. It's going to happen in Multnomah County as well. And it is happening in our county, Representative Hayden. So it's across the board, it can be done. And you know what's really cool? It's going to happen in Tucson as well, of all places. So what we're doing here in Oregon, we're leveraging private, public, and nonprofit dollars to make certain that we're getting everything right to the front line to house veterans. It's not only veterans that need housing, obviously, and they need more than housing. You know, casework and the mention of wet bed housing or housing first is going to be a main consideration for us this year. But we're happy about it. Things are happening. Things are going really strongly. And I think you guys should all smile because you have a great opportunity ahead of you to leverage with a small resources to leverage great results. And it has happened. I could go on for about 3 or 4 hours, but I'm going to show some pictures of my new grandchild. So if you have any questions, I'd love to entertain them or see if I can answer them. But that is the meat of my mission.
Any questions, or you want to wait till?
Actually, Maura, thank you. And Martha Schrader is great. She's my partner in crime on a lot of veterans issues in our county, and we work well together on those. But really, first of all, thank you and for your service. We, in our Veterans Committee, we always thank our veterans who come and testify in front of us, so I appreciate that. But also that, you know, you're coming at this from a place of personal commitment, and to then take that commitment and transform it in your community. You know, we saw the screen 1,100 or so, but we know that number is bigger because that was just a snapshot in time, and we know that number is significantly bigger when you're saying 400 and some in your own county, and then and we know Jackson County and other counties are really struggling with this population. So it's just really more of a thank you, and to show how when dynamic thinkers are willing to come together and work with people in their community, work with the landlord side, work with the private industry side, you know, you can get a lot of stuff done. People actually want to work to get it done. So thank you for doing it.
And Rep. Parrish, you set an example by working with Commissioner Schrader, using your resources and the resources of the county to leverage further resources on the outside. Thank you for that. Thank you, Minister.
I'll just add to that I think it's very exciting that the Association of Oregon Counties, and maybe Andy will say something about this, has a new housing committee, recognizing what a big need this is, and it is being co-chaired by Commissioner Martha Schrader and Commissioner Loretta Smith. So I'm looking forward to having some great ideas coming out and having that work with our committee.
I'm looking forward to that committee also. And if I may offer one further thanks, and that's to Rep. Gallegos. At the opening session last year, I sat with you at your desk and had a great time talking to you. Thank you very much for that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Well, good afternoon, Chair Kenny Geyer and committee members. I am Val Balfrey. I'm Executive Director for the Housing Authority of Washington County, also a member of the State Housing Stability Council. And more pertinently for this meeting, I'm a Air Force veteran, 24 years, Air Force pilot with combat service in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. It brings joy to my heart to listen to all the success stories that the folks that have come up here and shared with you. And there's so much that's being done and so much that we're still to be done, still to be worked on. Thank you for an opportunity to share my testimony today about the critical need of veterans housing in Oregon, when specifically for Washington County. We'll talk about our successes that we've seen, and also just a real quick address what I see as some of our challenges. Washington County, as you know, is growing at a very robust rate, 1.8%, with more than 10,000 new residents in the past year. We have an unemployment rate of under 5% for most of our cities, mm-hmm. and with seven of the top 11 real estate markets in Oregon, we're booming. However, many of our residents in our communities are struggling. One in five Oregonians, including those in Washington County, still depend on government aid for food, SNAP benefits, and charitable donations to meet basic nutritional needs. An estimated 1,610 Washington County veterans were below the poverty line in 2015. Washington County, like nearly every other county in Oregon, is also experiencing a housing crisis, with rent spiraling beyond the means of lower and now even sometimes middle income families. Insufficient housing supply, a 2% vacancy rate, and high rents are displacing formerly stable households, which is scary, and creating a market that is challenging for even low barrier renters. Veterans who may struggle with issues related to mental health, criminal background, or substance abuse, or with the lack of support of family or social network, often cannot find housing. Even with rental assistance such as the VASH program, as great as that is, veterans often wait months or sometimes even years before affordable housing is available. Despite this challenge, we do have several successes in Washington County. We've been taking advantage of the funding made available for housing services by Housing Bill 2417. Community Action of Washington County uses these funds for housing prevention and also rehousing of veterans. And as you've heard, there have been other communities in Oregon that have taken advantage of the dollars for housing construction or acquisition. I want to thank this committee personally on behalf of all veterans for your support in passing that bill 2417. Our county has been awarded 87 VASH vouchers since 2010, and virtually 98% of those vouchers are either leased or folks are out searching with a voucher in hand looking for housing. As just an add-on, the VASH vouchers work with chronically homeless veterans. HUD has made the definition a little more stringent now as far as what defines chronically homeless, and we're looking to see how much more difficult that makes it for us. Washington County is also using the VA Supportive Services for Veterans Family program to assist veterans in finding housing. We have 59 veteran households in the SSVF program, including 53 formerly homeless veterans. These veterans receive housing and services valued at over $70,000 from Community Action. The SFES program is currently the only funding source for application fees, security deposits, and/or clearing past landlord debts to house homeless veterans. And finally, the Housing Authority is partnering with qualified nonprofits to project-based vouchers to support extremely low-income and homeless veterans. These households are considered the most vulnerable and are often one paycheck or one medical crisis away from homelessness. Let me just share one Washington County success story. Until just recently, only one affordable housing property in Washington County had an explicit preference for low-income or homeless veterans. This property had only one unit, bedroom units, and a preference for homeless veterans 55 or older. Last Friday, however, Blanton Street Veterans Housing by Northwest Housing Alternatives received full funding for 20 units of safe, affordable housing featuring two- and three-bedroom
units for low-income veterans and their families. The Housing Authority committed 5 project-based VASH vouchers and 15 project-based housing choice vouchers to provide deep rental subsidy for these lowest-income veterans. Case management services, clinical services were provided through the Department of Veterans Affairs. Resident services and supportive services were provided by Norvis Health and Authority Alternatives and the Salvation Army. And finally, let me just address our remaining challenges and see them. While we believe that Housing First with wraparound services is the best permanent housing option for our homeless veterans, I believe that there's a definite value in offering well-managed transitional housing to improve veterans' housing outcomes. Unfortunately, in Washington County, there is only one transitional housing facility for veterans, the Salvation Army's Veterans and Family Center. The center serves 68 households, provides safe and decent shelter and 3 meals a day for veterans and their families for 90 days up to 9 months. The wait list, however, is always full, and wait times can vary from 1 to 8 weeks. We could use the VASH program as a way to provide relief to the transitional housing. Mm-hmm. But I think it's essential that we fund that transitional housing piece to provide an opportunity for folks to transition to being to the structure of being housed, the opportunity of getting services before they take on permanent housing of their own. Additional funds are also needed to encourage partnering with mental health services or similar agencies to assist veterans with housing placement, especially in rental markets like this one. Veterans who experience long-term homelessness often have many challenges, as we've mentioned, poor credit, poor rental history, possible criminal history, and struggle to find rental housing that they might qualify for, even with rental assistance. The Housing Authority partnered with mental health services provider Luke Dorf, Inc., for a part-time temporary staff member to provide housing placement support to chronically homeless VASH voucher holders. The added support of local experts who had existing relationships with understanding landlords had greatly increased the chances that these veterans would lease up successfully. I believe this model could be replicated elsewhere for all veterans across Oregon. And if additional funding were available, it could be done with or without VASH vouchers. In summary, there are still far too many veterans who are experiencing homelessness or risk of displacement in Oregon and in Washington County, and it will likely get worse as our veterans return from Afghanistan and Iraq at even higher rates of homelessness and housing instability than other Oregonians. We all must do what we can to restore honor and dignity to our veterans by providing opportunities for housing, jobs, and services. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Parrish.
So I think, Val, this question is to you for Washington County. You know, a lot of times we have an image of what a homeless veteran looks like. It's a guy with his BDU jacket on, and he's, you know, got a pack on his back. But the reality is you have people who are homeless and they're veterans, and they have children and a spouse. And it's beyond just sort of the image of the lone sort of veteran homeless. I mean, how many of the folks are you encountering that actually are coming with full family in tow?
Oh, we have an increasing number. I would say at least half the folks have families. And that's a problem because, like you said, we did have one-bedroom units, and it's difficult to house a family. The family needs all the supports that the veteran does, you know, and sometimes more. There's just it's a reunion of someone who's not been in the household and now they're under stressful conditions. So that's why I'm really pleased with this latest veterans housing, because it does address the need for larger units for our veterans.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Good afternoon, Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee. My name is Andy Smith, and I work for the Association of Oregon Counties. So, with a bit of trepidation, I would like to offer a friendly amendment to Commissioner Svarr's testimony, and that is, he said this didn't cost us any money. So it does. So what I want to focus you on, and there is always a risk here, you got a lot of numbers in front of you, but this, Representative Peluso, Representative Evans, and Representative Parrish, you guys have seen this before. The one page, this is the Bible of the VA funding pipe that goes to Oregon. So if you have that, I'll read the numbers. But this is a year. The total expenditures for Oregon in 2014, and you should multiply by two if you think of this as a biennium, right? The total expenditures in Oregon were $2.5 billion. About half of that is health care, the VA system. But the other half is something we call compensation and pension. And this is something that Representative Evans knows inside and out. You guys know it inside and out, but maybe you don't. That's a $1.3 billion a year that comes into Oregon. It comes directly to the veteran or his family member, the surviving spouse, as a low-income pension. These dollars are recycled in local economies. They're a huge economic stimulant. And to kind of jump to the chase, they can be housing payments. So I'm going to, the bottom of my testimony, if you look at it later, the average disability and compensation and disability claim, or the amount for an Oregonian vet, is the average is over $19,000 a year. So per month, that's about $1,600. Okay, that's for 67,000 vets. That's a static point in time for 2014. Since 2007, these dollars are coming in. Again, they grow every year and they stay. They pile on top of each other. Since 2007, it's doubled. It was about $600 million. So you crank it forward, we're at $1.3 billion. A reference point, EITC, and I may get this wrong, I think, is the ballpark. Is it $500 million a year for Oregon's? Am I close?
Say that again.
$500 million a year. The EITC, what is the value?
Yes, about $520
million. $520 million.
And we're leaving about
So this is very similar.
Million.
You're leaving a chunk of resource on the table. In the veteran system, again, it's doubled from 600 to 1.3. That's what it, $1.3 billion in 2014. But we think, based on what's happening in Oklahoma, which is kind of the guiding North Star, the rock star, because the numbers show it, what they get per veteran per capita, if we did it as well as they do it, and they do it slightly different system, but they get $500 million more a year.
And the point is they have roughly the same number of vets as we do.
That's based on adjusted for population and everything else. They get $511 million more a year.
I'll just clarify. So they're serving roughly the same population we are. We're only serving 3 in 10. They're serving about 3 in 10, roughly. However, because they've taken their folks further in sort of the process to the last mile, which you've heard me maybe talk about a little bit, like Mark is still sort of my own husband trying to figure out that last mile piece, because they get more of their people all the way to completion. When you get there, if you're 100% service-connected disabled, then it's a pretty significant chunk of money, and there are a lot of people out there like that. So they're doing that last mile piece better than we are. So they're serving maybe just roughly the same 3 out of 10 that we are. It's just they take their people further. And so, when we talk about EITC and we're leaving $100 million, really $5 billion on the table for veterans in the state of Oregon with a B. It's a huge number.
$5 billion a biennium.
A year.
$500 million.
No, for veterans. If we are serving our veterans,
when you
we are leaving. We are $500 million is how much better Oklahoma does than Oregon. But if we were fully serving all of our Oregon veterans, we're leaving $5 billion a year on the table.
So the aspiration, and again, I can't verify that or not verify it because I'm not sure how you've added that up. But the point is, they're one state that does it better. We've been in the top 10, we're the top 12 each year. We're close. But we're not up at this top level of performance, so I would argue that that's not by chance. It's a focused effort at the statewide level. It's their system. It's also the marginal investment in general fund or some resource at the front end to staff what we do as a county system, and it's really they're called CVSOs. These are the folks that can unlock that VA system to get the benefit. It's not just happenstance that Oregon does well. We have a system that's 70 years. We've had CVSOs, and Director Smith has told a story today in the Rules Committee. So the point is, the return is great, but you do need to make that initial investment. It's not entirely the SSVF that he talked about. Those are federal dollars. Yeah. You can look at your counties You can see in your individual counties what's happened to these the dollars. Historically, in your community, in your counties, and they've all gone up. Some are better, but it's really a dramatic story. I think of my role in many ways as an advocacy person, but I'm also trying to be a financial advisor. And why do you rob a bank? Because that's where the money is. Why do you look to the federal VA system? Because that's where the money is. You do need that little bit of seed money up front, but the results are dramatic. So. I'll stop there because I think what I want you to understand is just how significant that level of resources and benefits, that there's room for growth. This doesn't just stop after 1 year. Once an individual qualifies in the system, the disability rating can change, but usually it goes up. Sometimes it goes down. But these are lifelong benefits. There are more money than you could ever come up, really, in most scenarios as a GF, than we could ever do for veterans. If we, the real answer is to look to our federal partners who have these resources. They want to deliver these benefits, these earned benefits, but we need to have the capacity to kind of embrace that potential.
Great. Any other questions? Comments, Representative Evans?
No.
Chair.
It's all good.
Okay, good. Okay, thank you so much. Third panel, Gerald, am I saying this right? Pigott?
We need to have our choir.
Pigott? Pigott. Ken Houghton and Rosa Macias.
Chair, let's get a guy. If I could, you might, people around the building might recognize some of these folks from visits around the building yesterday. If there are any senators watching, they're going to be coming to a to an office near you.
So just okay, great. A heads up. Thank you for the heads up.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Some of you may recognize me. I was the champion speaker for House Bill 2417, along with Ryan Fisher.
Great.
So and just I'm very familiar with that bill.
Thank you. And if you could state your name for the record, especially since
Gerald
I missed
Pigott.
It. Thank you.
And I'm the Deputy Director of Home of the Brave, which is a transitional living program based here in Salem. I also do outreach in our community, and I've done that for the last 15 years. So before I talk about Home of the Brave, I'd like to share a few numbers with you that are outreach-based. The ODVA reported at the Veterans Summit 2 years ago that with the downsizing of the military, we're looking at 1 in 6 being homeless here in Oregon as they continue to downsize. That's approximately 5,000 people. 57% of them are going to be veterans from the Army that can't transition because of TBI, sexual trauma, and PTSD, combined with lack of employment skills. Most of them are from the Army and their infantry, and those skills just don't cross over, which is why Home of the Brave was created. It's a transitional living program that was started 2.5 years ago by myself. I'm a Navy veteran, Vietnam era, and our executive director is a Marine veteran from Guantanamo Bay. So the program is created based on peer support, consumer-run organization, and military history and value, because these are things all veterans, male and female, understand. And because the management team are veterans, that's where the peer support piece comes in. We can mentor these guys, we can work with them, and our residents are what are classified as consumer-run organization. We basically give them the rules and the policies. They implement them. They work with each other to help each other move forward, and we kind of drive the ship, so to speak. So it's innovative in the way that it's approaching the housing crisis that veterans are looking at. One of the things about Home of the Brave that we do is you've heard a lot of talk about HUD-VASH, you've heard talk about SSVF, you've heard talk about working with other agencies. One of the things the Home of the Brave does is we partner with all of our agencies in our community to leverage all the services that are being offered. Whether a veteran is getting housed, needs furniture, we have resources for that, housing, employment. Home of the Brave is the only transitional living program I know of right now that sponsors a dual diagnosis group for veterans that have dual diagnosis. They meet twice a month at the house, and it's a group forum type thing where they can deal with their addiction, their PTSD. The Vet Center sends people over to the house to do outreach to our clients that have PTSD or sexual trauma, or, you know, brain injury, traumatic brain injury. So we leverage those resources in our community. In the 2.5 years that we've been operating, we've put 29 veterans through the program successfully, and they have transitioned and become taxpayers and productive members of our society. But when they graduate the program, it doesn't stop there. We utilize a 30, 60, 90, 120 model, which means 30 days after they graduate from the program, myself or the executive director meets with them and follows up and see what their needs are. What are some of the challenges you're experiencing? How can we address them? We do the same thing after 60 days, 90 days, and 120. At 120, they're usually pretty stable, and unless they say they need something else, they're considered a successful graduate. And it's very hands-on. The other thing that we do at Home of the Brave is that we teach rent classes, we teach budgeting, we do employment skills, we do resume building workshops, we work with Vets Court. I'm pretty happy to announce that we had a veteran out of Vet Court who last week got into housing with two felonies on his record, and he's going to be reunited with his son tomorrow. So that wouldn't have been possible for him without that relationship with Vet Court. So we're working very closely with Vet Court in a trial basis right now. The other thing that we do at Home of the Brave is we deal with all veteran issues. We bring VSOs in to talk to vets. We do outreach. We are a voice for veterans, whether they're a member of the house or the community. We go out in the bush. We hike miles to find the Vietnam-era veterans that are aging now and are ready to come out of the bush and seek health care because they're starting to develop problems. So it's making it tougher for them to stay out in the bush, and we help with that. We have relationships with West Salem Clinic so we can get homeless veterans into medical, and we transport them over there through HOPE, who runs a medical van. So our goal is to address these issues that veterans are experiencing, because in the house it's a can-do attitude. There is no reason for failure. And so we work to make sure these guys are successful. And it's a program that's kind of innovative in a way when you compare it with other transitional living programs, because it's really putting the vet forward first. And that's one of the cool things about it. And I'm pretty much done on that for now.
Any questions on that particular? So what is your success rate?
Right now we're tracking at 98.3%.
Wow. That's for people who are still successful after the 120-day?
100%.
100% at that point.
In fact, one of our graduates is now serving on the board of directors for the hub, providing transportation to homeless folks in our Salem area.
Representative Evans.
Yeah, to say that I'm proud of these guys is an understatement, but a story that I think is relevant for this. Before I knew, at least before I got a chance to meet Gerald and some of the folks at the Home of the Brave, I had actually had a couple of graduates of the program as students at Chemeketa. And everybody talks about wanting to have a program that helps folks help themselves. And quite frankly, I saw the end product before I saw the product, and I'm truly impressed by this approach. I know it's not the only approach. I know it's not the model for everywhere. But hypothetically, if there are more funds some days for veteran services, programs like this and some of the other ones that may be possible and have been talked about earlier today really can transform lives in ways that few other programs can. So,
well, I do think it's a great example of how providing housing is not always enough, that the supportive services and particularly the peer support is really important. And I love how you're located right next to the Department of Employment. So it's symbolically good as well as, and it's very close to us. And they have a check-in at 4 o'clock every day. And so I was thinking that might be a good field trip for this committee at some point. It's really close.
Can I explain that a little bit
please
more,
do.
Please?
Please do.
every morning at, well, the routine of the day is at 0800, we talk in military time in the house, at 0800, they're to be ready to go and colors are posted outside the house. At 8:30 is chow. At 9 o'clock is muster. At 9 o'clock is when they get their assignment for the day. They leave the house to go accomplish their mission. And then they come back at 1600 hours, 4 o'clock, and report on how well they accomplish their missions. And their missions are individualized. There's no group approach to anybody because it has to be individualized. For example, there's one guy that just came in the house yesterday. Mm-hmm. He has a strong background in sales and IT. So his goal is 5 job applications in those arenas per day. And he has to report back at 4 o'clock on the successes of today's mission. Tomorrow he'll get a new mission, and it'll be similar to that. But we work with landlords because we're in a very tight housing market here in Salem right now. I checked with Larry Targowski and Ron Hayes at Mountain West, and currently the housing rate's about 1.8% here. And landlords are challenged, is a great way to say it. There's more supply than, or more demand than there is supply. And it's very difficult to get these guys housed. Mm-hmm. But we use the housing first model combined with intensive case management. Mm-hmm. And I just received word before I got here that HUD-VATCH is already allocated for the Salem area, so there are no vouchers available at this point in time.
Well, I just want to say, so when I approach housing and I look at housing issues, your model is what I think of when I think about how do you address sort of people more in a cohort style, like here's what we need to do housing for veterans, and here's what we need to do for seniors and single moms on the run with kids with domestic violence. I mean, they're just, it's not sort of a one-size-fits-all because each kind of cohort of demographic population has its own individual challenge, whether it is healthcare, or we know what the issues around veteran housing are because it usually comes with medical and it comes with some other things. And so this is just one of those really good examples of where you say, okay, let's take a universe of people we know is having a housing issue, and then let's break that down into bites where we say, how do we then do the housing piece, but it comes with these other challenges and wrap those policies around because, you know, the greater kind of housing crisis headlines that we're hearing, there's a lot of subsets underneath that that are going to take really different approaches to solve that. And you're showing, and there's certainly other programs out there too, you know, like on the Justice Reentry side, we heard the program in Lane County. They're doing some really innovative things for that population around housing. And it's, for me, it's like, how do we take this bigger problem around housing and break it into these little bites of who needs what where, and to try to get the best policy that features solutions for that individual population. And I just think you're doing a fantastic job. And, you know, I'm glad you guys were supportive on the document recording fee. And I just really appreciate hearing the story.
Representative Parrish, I'd like to address what you said for a minute. One of the things that we do to break down those barriers is identify them and then combine advocacy with it. When one of my guys are going on a job application or they're going to a house interview, I will go with them sometimes and advocate on their behalf to address landlord concerns of PTSD, what's going to happen. And then I provide the solutions and the challenges, or I challenge their fears. And in a lot of times, we get that to reverse. And I think advocacy is a big part of what you're talking about in once those barriers are identified on how to break them down.
Thank you so much. That's great. I want to make sure we have enough time for the rest of the panel. We have one more panel of veterans after this. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Good afternoon. My name is Rosie Macias. And I am on the board of director for SOVA. SOVA stands for Serving Our Veterans at Home. SOVA was created by veterans for veterans. There is no criteria to get help from SOVA besides just having to serve in the military, which is great because a lot of other organizations, you have to meet either criteria by being honorable discharge, serving 180 days in the military, or other things like that. SOVA works very well with Arches, HOPE, and other organizations here. We help pay for security deposit, application fees, utility assistance, rent, hotel stay, ID, gas, and food for a lot of the needy veterans in town. One of the main things that SOVA has done is that we host a yearly stand down. The stand down is a wellness, it's a health and wellness event. It's pretty much a one-stop shop for the day where we bring VA organization and all those organizations in town that work with veterans. And the hope is that we can catch all those veterans who have fallen to the crack or those who are about to fall to the crack and get them all the help that they need. The 2015 stand-down was held last August, and it was our biggest yet. Our first one was in 2009, actually. So 2009, we had the first stand-down, and it was just 10 organizations and 30 veterans. 2015, we had 350 veterans with over 50 organizations that came out about that. Out of those 350 veterans, 120 were homeless, at risk of being homeless, or some type of assistance. 38 of those were female veterans. Out of those 38 female veterans, 18 were at risk of being homeless or something like that sense. Only 6 of those 18 qualified for VA HUD-VASH. 4 were able to get assistance. The other 2, again, because of lack of housing, you only have a certain amount of time to get housing. They lost those VASHER. SOVA last year, we spent over $6,000 helping veterans in need. There's just not enough organization in town that can help veterans for different things. Like I said, we help with security deposit, utilities, different things like that. And I guess, you know, I am here just to testify against the need of more funding and what other organization and how important it is to have things like that for our veterans here locally.
Thank you. Thank you for your work. Yes, Representative.
She's not going to brag on herself, but Rosa is, much like Director Smith, once a Marine, always a Marine. And if you've not gone to a stand down or any event that she's planned, which there are many, it is ordered and it is organized as a Marine event shall be. And she yesterday brought some of her troops to the building to lobby, and she has done an outstanding job and does an outstanding job, especially now with this era of veterans where we have so many more female veterans than we've ever had before. The challenges that the VA is facing in terms of just basic transition from maybe 10% to 15% of veterans being women to increasing numbers of combat-related combat service for women veterans as well has really complicated the issues, and she's at the forefront of a lot of the programs to try to reach out to those.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's all. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ken Houghton. I work for Community Action Agency Arches Project for the SSVF grant. My title is Case Manager and Outreach Coordinator. I work a lot with Gerald and Rosie both. Mid-Willamette Valley Community Action Agency is currently providing services to veteran households using funds awarded through the SSVF Support Services for Veterans Family Grant from the Department of Veteran Affairs and the EHA Vet DERF House Bill 2417 provided for the state of Oregon. Just last year, we were able to use the dollars from House Bill 2417, and that enabled us, well, through the SSVF grant, we are in charge to house 75 households for the year. But because the House Bill 2417, we were able to house 115 last year. And providing services for veteran households experiencing homelessness or imminent risk of becoming homeless, we have become aware of the following gaps in services in our community. Need for longer-term rent utility assistance than SSVF or House Bill 2417 can provide. We can only provide through the SSVF program rent assistance for about five to six months. A lot of these individuals need longer-term care. Longer-term supported services. We, for that 5 months, we do provide intensive case management. We meet with each client household twice a month. We have employment services, and we have housing placement services. But that is starting to be harder and harder all the time with the housing crunch. We've worked really closely with HUD-VASH this last year and helped them house 29 veteran households this year. And I was the one that got the email notifying us that the vouchers have been filled and there's no more. There's more need for supportive housing projects, programs that include subsidized rental units with supportive services, such as mental health providers, employment readiness, and placement supportive case management. There's also a lack of sufficient emergency shelter beds that meet the needs of veterans, quiet, calm environments, ability to have assistance animals with them. There's only one shelter in the Salem area, that Salvation Army, that's really allowing their service animals to accompany them. Additional challenges for veteran households requiring long-term housing stability. Again, HUD-VASH, as you know, I just informed you that their vouchers are full. Many of the veterans we see have some type of disability. Approximately 40% of the time, individuals have not identified that they have a disability, so have no diagnosis. There's a high incidence of substance abuse among the veterans we've served. Veterans with apparent mental health issues do not seek support treatment due to stigma and fear of negative impact on their career or general day-to-day lives. Need for transportation assistance. A lot of these individuals have been homeless for many, many years, and they don't have transportation. One of the things we do is we provide them monthly bus passes. If they have vehicles, we provide them gas for the housing search and for employment. We're able to also provide them with all the tools and clothing that they need for that employment. Yeah, interviewing, clothing, and stuff. But like I said, our assistance is very short term, and we do have a cap on the amount of money we're allowed to spend on per household. There's a lack of VA drug and alcohol assessment and treatment in the veterans' home community, and Oregon National Guard service members who have been deployed for catastrophe cleanups, support, firefighting, etc., do not qualify for VA veterans benefits because they have not been deployed under Title 10 orders or have not served in a hazardous pay zone, Iraq or Afghanistan. It's really disheartening to have to turn away some of these guys and gals that served in the reserve for 15 or 20 years, and they found themselves in a situation where they're homeless or they're in imminent risk of becoming homeless. The 2417 funds are used to assist veteran households in Marion and Polk counties that are experiencing homelessness and that are at imminent risk of becoming homeless. State-directed eligibility requirements include veterans in the household must have an honorable discharge. Household's income must fall below 80% of the area median income. Funds are used to assist eligible households with the following: one-time rent utility assistance when the assistance will stabilize the household's housing, rent utility deposit assistance to help households obtain permanent housing or move to a more affordable housing. In some instances, these funds are leveraged with the support services for the families, SSVF, in partnership with HUD-VASH to better serve a veteran household. That 2417 enabled us to do a lot of work with the HUD-VASH because we pay the deposits and the application fees that they're not able to pay. So that's here. In my work, we go out in the brush a lot looking for these veterans. That's part of my job, is to go out and try to find them. One of the things that I've found just within the last year, I've been told by five different occasions by Vietnam veterans that they were drafted and they had to serve or threat of going to prison, and that they no longer want to try to get services from anything VA related because they were told they had nothing coming for so many years. And it's really hard to convince those individuals, you know what, This money's here. We can help you if you want to move forward. But they still don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So maybe something from the state would help a lot more.
Okay, thank you so much. Questions? All right, thank you. Our last panel are some more veterans. We have Robert Kirby, Robert Hall, and maybe Pedro Rios. Is Pedro here? Pedro? Okay, and so if you can each, as you begin talking, just state your name for the record. It's for all the people that might be listening now or later. If they go back and listen on archives.
What you call me,
John? Would you like to start?
Excuse me, I have problems with my throat. My name is Pedro Rios. I'm an Air Force Vietnam veteran, and I'm currently staying at home, Brave. I'm here in my 6 months transition period. It saddens me to hear that the vouchers are no longer available for us because I was hoping to find one. And my story is I came here to see my family. My fiance had passed away, as I was told, and as I got here to be with my son. And eventually, I end up getting a surprise. Thank you, sir. I was staying in the mission, and my friend came and picked me up. They said, someone's going to take you to the Portland VA. And it turned out to be, at first, Rosella, my fiance. I was told she passed away. Mm. So what happened was, it was her.
Oh, gee.
And she was in a car accident and lost amnesia. She has amnesia now. Mm. And I was told to be, I have to be a psychiatrist, a best friend. And we started being as best friends. And we progressed. She still doesn't remember the past at all, but we became closer, and now she's like my fiance now, and it's been hard to see this. But I realized if I wouldn't come, I came here for a reason. I didn't realize what was going to happen, and now we find out that she's had problems with her heart, so we're dealing with each situation, and I'm looking forward to this to be cleared up and straightened out. And I enjoyed being with the home of the brave. I learned a lot of values, comrades with my friends that I met. And I'm hoping that there will be a place for me and my family to get together and be a family again. On Christmas Day, I'm a non-service connected, so I get a certain income, $1,075, which is unbelievable to get housing. I called the other day this young landlord. She said she blatantly told me that she could not deal with me unless we had $1,500. So that was kind of shocking. But there's organizations that I've been hearing that will help with that with vouchers, and I'll be able to meet that criteria. So I'm looking forward to that to happen, and I thank the Home of the Brave because without them I wouldn't be here. And I was able to change my life and my priorities. And on Christmas Day, I surprised my fiance by bringing my daughters, my young daughters, who were with my oldest daughter in college. On Christmas Day, I paid for them to be with her, and they walked in, and I couldn't explain how the joy that she felt, and she thanked me so much. And
that's
it's
fantastic.
Working.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you for that story.
Thank you for your time, baby.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Robert Kirby, U.S. Army, Vietnam vet. Well, the story's pretty simple. I lost my wife to cancer in 2001 after 27 years of being married. And I just kind of spiraled downhill and lost pretty much everything I had. And I kind of ended up with the Home of the Braves. They extended their hand out for me. And I hope by the time I finish the program, I'll be back in society and be productive. And we need this kind of program. I've really looked at it. It's a 6-month program. And it does help a lot of my brothers, We need programs like this. It's just, I don't know what else to say. You know, like I say, I lived in the back of my truck for almost 7 months, a homemade camper. It was a 6x6x7 for 6 months. So it's kind of nice to get back into society, and the Home of the Braves have offered me that opportunity to get back in the community. But all I have to say.
How long have you been there?
I'm a resident of Oregon. I was drafted here from Oregon. I just came in from Arizona 2 years ago. I had a residence here, but in 2010 I moved to Arizona, health purposes. I found out it was just a little too hot, so I had to come back.
Checking on. But how long have you been with Home of the Brave?
Pardon me?
How long have you been with Home of the Brave?
I've been with the Home of the Braves now for just a little over 2 months.
Okay.
I put myself maybe 4 months at the max. That way I'll have enough money to get back into my own place and get on my feet again.
Okay.
Hopefully, if everything works out right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Robert Hall. I'm a Desert Storm vet, Army. I'm a graduate of Home of the Brave. Right now I attend Chemeketa Community College, going to get a bachelor's degree in human services in order to come back and help some of my veterans, so because I would understand them a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But without the Home of the Brave, things wouldn't have worked with me just doing it on my own. I needed people that could advocate for me, like Joe said, that he would go and he would talk to people and let them know, okay, this guy has done this for 6 months and this is the type of things that he needs. And without people advocating for us and doing that, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. Really, I actually come from the city of Flint, Michigan, and when I got here and things weren't going right, I was going to take the attitude of that city and just, okay, I'm just going to live like this then. That's how they want me to live. But I got in contact with a few people and learned a few things and got on the right path, and Home of the Brave is one of the reasons that I am here and able to go to college and have a successful life now.
It's fantastic. You're probably a little lucky that you're not in Flint, Michigan right now.
Yeah.
The water crisis there.
Right, right.
So that's great. So any questions?
Much questions, but again, thank you for your service.
Yep.
And that's our tradition in our other committee that we're on. We just appreciate those who've served and what it has meant to you and your family, and sometimes the hard times that come out of that service. And so just want to thank you for that. My husband's also a Gulf War veteran, and that's a small population, but a really tough, hard to serve population, a lot of issues that came out of that. So just thank you all.
I want to mention my intern, Erica Hoover, who is here, wave, who also served, and Representative Evans.
In this building, because we have to deal with a lot of information rather quickly, we sometimes forget that sharing some of these stories, especially from a vet's perspective of never wanting to be in a position to ask for help, is tough to do. As someone who sought treatment myself for another situation related to military experience, I know it's not easy. I also know that the fact that you're able to come and share will help other veterans understand it's okay to get help, and that the expectation, of course, is once you're on your feet, you're going to reach back and help the next guy or gal. So thank you again for everything you did.
And you're studying human services at Chemeketa, and you might end up serving on the Human Services Committee, like Representative Evans.
Is that Paul Evans over there?
Yeah, that's your role model.
I'm a speech class.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
He could be your role model. So I don't know if there's anyone here that would know. Right now, the number of renters in Oregon is somewhere around 40%. Does anyone know what the number of veterans are in terms of how many are homeowners versus renters versus homeless? Does anyone have that breakdown?
So we probably don't have that off the top, but I think we could probably pull data like VA loans. Mm-hmm. So federal government, if you're a homeowner, mm-hmm. certainly offers a VA loan. Oregon has its own home loan program for the VA. And so I'm looking at Director Smith, who could probably pull us some data on number of people have a home loan. That would probably show you a good indication of home ownership. I think we've heard the number of truly homeless folks. The number I use is 4,500. I know that Paul goes a little higher than I do.
Somebody else said 5,000 out here.
Yeah, and I think Paul, is sort of in the 8,000 camp. So, so it's somewhere in that range of the 350,000 or 320 to 350, depending on what number you're looking at. But veterans who are here. We know we've got 22,000 pensioners in the state who are actually get a what's called a 1099-R. It's a pension W-2 from the Department of Defense, which is a little bit different than the disability folks who wouldn't get a W-2 statement for that. So we can put some of that together in terms of home ownership versus rental versus folks who are in more of a transient crisis type state, and I'm sure that we could pull it together.
I'm curious. Cameron, is there anything you'd like to say since you've been sitting so patiently back there? Director of Veterans Affairs? Nope. He's also my constituent, so I've got to make sure to ask you if you want to say anything. Well, that information I think would be really helpful to know what the proportionality of this population is to what Oregon looks like as a whole. That would be really useful information. Thank you, everyone, so much for your service, for coming here and sharing your stories. There's so many thousands of people out there that you represent by sitting here and reminding us of what the needs are. And we are all looking very hard with a lot of leadership from some of our colleagues on this dais at ways to try to make sure we can leverage federal funds and get more services here. So thank you to the representatives who have been big champions of that. Carla Pluso on the Veterans Affairs, too.
That's right.
Right?
After Veteran Affairs.
Thank you so much, everyone. I am going to close our informational hearing and adjourn the...
Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you for having this. Thank you for having this.
Adjourn the...
Thank you.
Madam Chair.